You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth All Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 1st of February, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live today at RadioAryan.com because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today? Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. I'm looking forward to our podcast tonight. And I say that because
the Daily Mail reporters
aren't No. Well, I've checked outside. There aren't any behind the hedgerows out there. I'm hoping that's gonna die down now. But as I say, it's a great day today because you've released part 18 of your new series. Do you want to talk a little bit about that before we get right into it?
Yeah. Well, this was actually going to be the last part, to be honest. I was intended a couple of months ago just to do one or maybe two, and I did the one last month, and this one I kind of put a bit of a real effort in this week to complete it for today, and I think I've got an interview with Deanna tomorrow as well, so that should be interesting. The thing is, there's one or two things that have, really got under my skin about World War II. And one was how the German minorities were not only ignored and whitewashed out of history, but I watched a part of World at War, the documentary which was shown in Britain in the 70s, and where the guy actually says in the opening first part that the Germans were acting and there were crocodile tears and it's really bugged me over the years, so I was determined to try and nail that one. And we call the part, who really started World War II.
Well, I certainly can't be the only person that was relieved to see the "to be continued" bit at the end, because I know you'd said that it was going to be the last one, and I thought, well, there's got to be a little bit more yet. I mean, how long was Greatest Story Never Told? Was that 25 episodes?
26, I think. 26. Maybe 27 with the sources.
Well, hopefully there'll be quite a few more. There's more that can be gone into, I think. And as you say, this one's particularly interesting because it goes into what was happening before the war and really nails who it was that really started World War II. And when you talk to people, most people aren't even aware that it was Britain that declared war on Germany. They think it was the other way around.
France attacked Germany.
Yeah, they think Germany attacked Poland and they don't, and then Germany attacked France. Well, no, Britain and France declared war on Germany, and Germany had very good reasons for going into Poland, as we'll get into here. But the video starts off, and you've got a good quote from Churchill, where he says, well, he's basically saying that history is going to be kind to him because he intends to write it. And I think one important thing about Churchill's memoirs is that there's actually no mention of the Holocaust in them, is there?
No, there isn't. I think that grew, again, it seemed to grow in the 1970s. But it's quite amusing. I saw a commentary about Churchill where somebody said, a while back, but I just caught a comment while I was answering somebody, and they said, if the pilots of the planes that went over to Germany to bomb the German cities could now look back and see London is only 58% white, and everything, what's going on with the invasion of Europe, Africa, they would turn them planes round, and he used some real explicit words to drop them on Churchill's head, which I thought was quite, not only true, quite amusing.
I think they didn't like doing what they'd been asked to do. But they wanted to win the war. I mean, they're just obeying orders, and Britain wanted to win the war. Whether the war was right or wrong, that was for the leaders to decide, and the Air Force and the Army just had to do their best.
I think what he meant was the outcome of winning that war. If they saw the result today and everything which they couldn't believe. If you'd have told them back then, they just wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is just the proof that our leaders were traitors, even back then. I mean, you see the way Britain is today. We were told, oh, you know, if you don't defeat Hitler, you'll all be speaking German, and they're all speaking Urdu and Pashtun.
Exactly.
And Pakistani, yeah, and Indian, and, you know, what would it have mattered if people had been speaking German? At least the country would have remained European. And Hitler had a massive respect for Britain and British history and the British Empire. We'd never have lost the British Empire. I mean, that's got to be one of the big pointers that not all that we're told about this is true, is the fact that we lost our empire. Churchill lost us our empire, and yet we are told that he's the greatest Englishman that ever lived. And he destroyed, you know, the biggest empire that the world had ever known. And it was Churchill that lost it.
Well, yeah, I mean, he lost it to a sense, but I do believe that the central banks covertly, you know, had the same kind of amount of wealth coming in, just it wasn't through military means. But you learn about Churchill, I mean, was it Singapore, one of the worst defeats of the British Empire, 30,000 Japanese beat something like 120,000 defending. One or two other disasters. Norway was another disaster. He wasn't the best of leaders. He wasn't voted in by anybody on merit. He was just given the job because he would do what he was told, and whether or not, you know, he had any military instincts, I don't think he ever knew the difference between posting a letter and organising a war.
I think his war record was pretty terrible from the first war, wasn't it? And the Boer War. Certainly didn't merit any distinction for his actions, and basically
no Victoria Cross, were there?
No, if you compare him to Hitler, running to the front with the mail for the soldiers, winning the Iron Cross for bravery, and you compare that to Churchill, he was drunk throughout most of the war. Apparently, he had to have somebody else reading out his speeches. So those speeches that get played, these famous speeches, we'll fight them on the handing grounds and on the beaches. There was somebody else because he was hammered. Apparently, there were reports he confessed to liking dressing up in women's underwear as well. I mean, quite degenerate, quite drunk.
Yeah.
He got himself into massive debts, so the Jews bailed him out basically. So he was a Jewish puppet right from the very start.
Yeah, he was taught, the man. He talked like before at tongue as well, as the Red Indians were said. Like one minute he talked well of, you know, saying we're here to save Christianity, but all the time his actions proved different. I don't think he knew what he wanted, to be honest. He just knew he had to obey or he'd be out on the streets.
Well, he knew what communism was like. He knew what Islam was like. He knew what the Jews was like. And then he just sort of failed to have any principles and took us to war on the Jews' say-so, basically, on the bankers' say-so, and got us making an alliance with Stalin after he was one of the first people to write about the threat of Bolshevism and its Jewish component. But he just didn't have any principles, didn't have any integrity, and he was right. It was him that wrote the history books afterwards, with the help of the Jewish publishers. Of course. So, and what do you do basically at the beginning of this episode? You sort of outline what the chapter is going to be about. A lot of the things that you go into more depth later on, you sort of mentioned at the beginning, you talk about the blank check that Britain gave to Poland, effectively saying that if Poland could provoke Germany into war, Britain and France would back Poland up. And then you bring up Britain's Blue Book and the German White Book, both of which we've spoken about. And then you bring up something that I wasn't actually aware of. The German White Book is four times the size of the British Blue Book. That tells you something.
Apparently, the British invented the Blue Book in the 1600s, and they've been using it in other countries of their own colour. And what it basically means, for anybody who doesn't understand, is that for the last, say, few months before war, if everything is logged and all the meetings and, you know, correspondence is all logged, then, you know, history can look back, you know, and we can see what the real events were proven to be what caused that war. It's a good idea, but in World War One, when they brought out the Blue Book, initially the historians and even the public were well receiving of it because, you know, they did believe it. But bit by bit, it came to pass that it was really like just hiding up a number of secrets, and they used different means of hiding these things, which really should have been on display. So that kind of lost all credibility. So when it comes to the Second World War, rather than hide or lie about things, what they did, they just didn't bother printing it. They just think that theirs was about 140 pages compared to the 400. And what this meant was that there was no mention at all of any German offers or any suffering of the minorities, you know, because they gathered on the border in March and threatening to be mobilised. Poland were threatening, you know, to be mobilised, which is more or less a declaration of war. They did it around about August, I think, eventually. But this rises tension then in the country. The Germans are thinking we better get out of here, and the Poles are thinking, where's a German? I want to beat him up. The thing is, though, when a German says, I better get out of here, he's leaving his home. Because as we discussed last time, Danzig, many people might not have realised, was a German city stuck in Poland with no means to get back to the, you know, back to the right. In fact, they had a train, I think, which had to be sealed. And there weren't many of them, believe it or not. A sealed train which took people every now and again back and forth. And what happens is what happened after World War II was that the people stranded in these countries, whether it be Poland or anywhere else, they consequently lost their Germanness. In Poland, they even took the German surname and changed it to a Polish-sounding similar name, but, you know, which never happened in Germany. If a Pole went to Germany, he always kept his name. But in all these other countries, that was the main intention of breaking up Germany, the Treaty of Versailles. It was to kind of take a couple of million people out of Germany and wipe them off in good time. They just won't be Germans anymore.
Well, that Versailles Treaty, I mean, that was an unlawful treaty for that reason, because the right to self-determination was defined by not the United Nations, but the name of the organization. League of Nations, yeah. It was determined that everybody had a right to self-determination and a right to be ruled by their own people, basically. So what that meant was that Czechoslovakia should have been ruled by Czechs because it was majority Czechs. Any German territory should have been ruled by Germans because it was majority German territory. And what they did, they said, well, no, we're going to give this German territory to Poland. We're going to give this bit to the Czechs. We're going to chop this bit in half. And it broke all these declarations that they actually made. So when they actually put that treaty to them, they're already breaking their word and breaking this declaration on self-determination. So it was illegal from that point of view, what was actually done there. And of course, that just set things up for the Second World War, which you get into. But you see, so this Britain's Blue Book, which was, you said it was 100 or something odd pages, and the German one, 140, and the German one was 400 and something. I always thought that the German White Book, I thought that came out after the war. But what you're saying here is that the Britain's Blue Book that came out in 1939, so the White Book must have come out round about that time as well.
That's right.
So it must be that when they declare war or when there is an outbreak of war, they publish everything that each side publishes, everything that they've got up to that point, showing what actually led to it. So nobody can say afterwards, oh, you've added that.
Correct.
So it's all there done by the date when they, you know, when they sort of go to war.
Mm-hmm.
And the White Book, you say that, Britain banned that from being published in America. So what happened
there?
Yeah,
that's right. Well, obviously, they tried to, the secret documents they found in Warsaw, which confirmed that it was the West pushing for a war, and Poland was actually a trap. When they tried to release this, obviously the Americans denied everything. And so that could have been the reason why Britain, I don't think America would have argued, of actually banning it. But to ban it, I mean, it's so that the public can make up their mind reading both books. So when you're banning one book, it kind of makes a mockery of it all, especially when the British one wasn't, you know, particularly in depth.
So there was two reasons for them to ban the white book, wasn't there? There was the reason that it showed that the Poles and the Germans, Germany had been making out all these overtures for peace to the Poles, and the Poles had been told that Britain and France were going to back them up if they could get Germany into war. So that's one reason about Britain. Yeah. And the other was about America, wasn't it? Because there was Roosevelt in there, and the fact that he was looking for war as well. Yeah, so tell us a bit about Roosevelt and what he was saying, because he said to the Czech president, didn't he, or the exiled Czech president, that he was going to get America into the war later on. So when did that bit happen?
Well, you've got to look back, and it's a bit of a gang, really. You've got Roosevelt, you've got Stalin. He introduced Stalin to America as Uncle Joe, if you remember, so he could get him into the League of Nations. And then you've got Britain and France, another two Masonic countries, who were both handing out from the First World War with America. So it's a bit of a gang, really. But we are led to believe that Pearl Harbor was the catalyst for America. Where I saw a little bit early on in the documentary, newspaper headlines of Roosevelt doing his damnedest to get into World War II, especially when Russia was under threat. So this is what's come as a surprise to me. But people who were going by the official narrative don't expect anything from America because they were neutral until, you know, the Japanese did this dastardly deed. But now, when we look into it, you know, Roosevelt was the kind of guy who was going to the elections and saying, look, I'm not going to take our boys abroad to fight in another overseas European war. Vote for me. Lying through his back teeth, obviously. And then as soon as the first chance he gets, he's telling France and Britain to keep on at Poland to instigate a war, because they would have known, it would have took a genius, that as long as Germans, minorities, are being killed, you know, it's only a matter of time before Hitler invades. And he waited 6 months, as I pointed out. So, I mean, how long can you wait when you're hearing that your own people are getting massacred? I don't think Trump is hanging around, for sure, especially, you know, a powerful nation what Germany become. But Poland, as I showed again, showed these maps, which have Berlin as the border. And even Roosevelt was mentioned the other week. He said he did a speech and it was reported in the American press, caused a bit of upside downness in Congress as well. So a lot of people weren't happy with him. And he said the borders of the Rhine is where the US borders end. So, you know, he's huge, huge pointers there for his thinking. And obviously, he's telling France as well, he's making some good offers to France about aid. And so, you know, what happens, though, is that Poland starts to strut. Because they remember, you know, they just won the World War, well, 3 years before, and Britain and France are the two world powers in everybody's eyes. So Poland's thinking, well, this is all right. We can make our borders on Berlin. And it's not doing any justice to the talks while Germans are dying. So you look at the predicament that Germany's in. They don't want to start a world war. This has been obvious. And yet they don't want Germans being massacred. And not only massacred, they were tortured, eyes gouged out, typical Bolshevik stuff. And so Hitler had to call time. And if anything, some people could accuse him of waiting too long, because 58,000 were known to be killed, probably more, because a lot more were missing, another 20,000 at least. And so he's doing everything he can. He's making offers which even his own negotiators are stunned at, and Britain's not reporting this. So the outside world, as far as Britain and America are, you know, the Germans are just being pigheaded. Nothing to say that the Americans and the British and the French are behind it all. But mainly Roosevelt, who was insisting that, you know, they give them this this reason for stalling all the time. So it was a trap, you know. He were a step away from smashing this Treaty of Versailles Instead, he did it the air way and beat France and Britain on the continent.
Oh, Hitler was really put into a position where he didn't really have any other choice. As you say, it had been 6 months, 59,000 Germans murdered, tortured, eyes gouged out, hundreds of thousands of German refugees on the border saying, look, this is terrible. We've been kicked out of our homes. We're being pogromed. You know, we hear about the Jews being pogromed. We don't hear anything about the Germans being pogromed, which is what was happening in Poland. And Hitler had extreme patience. He tried to do everything diplomatically. But what do you do when you start hearing that thousands of your citizens have been brutally murdered and the rest of the world is doing nothing about it? I mean, that was the reason for it. But hang on a second. Just let me cough a minute.
Yeah.
I was listening to Carolyn Jaeger, the repeats of Carolyn Jaeger's Heretics Hour, which we're repeating here at Radio Aryan every day. And there was an episode the other day, and it was talking about Roosevelt, and it was saying that he's actually of Jewish heritage, which I thought was a bit surprising. Yeah. But she checked it out, and there's very good evidence to show that he was actually Jewish, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think it's a Illuminati bloodline as well.
It makes a lot of sense because he had all these Jewish advisors, Bernard Baruch and all the rest of them. He was obviously carrying out Jewish plans, really, because it was the Jews that were. It was the Jews that were furious at Hitler more than anyone else. And you also list the reasons or the enemies of Hitler, and when you think about it, every one of them is Jewish. The first one is the banks, the banksters. Hitler was an enemy of the banks, and of course he changed the banking system, which basically cut out the international financier middlemen, so they didn't make any money on the trades. And again, as I say, I mean, banking, 98-99% Jewish. He was the enemy of pornography. He got rid of pornography. Again, pornography has always been a Jewish industry. It's always been Jews that pushed to get laws changed, that published all this pornography. He was the enemy of Freemasonry. Freemasonry, as we've said, was just a front for the Jews. It was before the Jews were given civil rights. They needed Goyim to advocate for what the Jews wanted. So that's what Freemasonry was. They exchanged their secret Kabbalah Gnostic ideas to the Gentiles in exchange for the Gentiles advocating for civil rights for Jews and various other things that the Jews wanted. Hitler was the enemy of Bolshevism. Again, we know communism, that's Jewish. It's admitted that it's Jewish. I mean, even the head of the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Jerusalem, the Nazi hunter, I forget his name, just this week, he admitted that the Soviets and the Soviet Union was largely run by Jews. I mean, he was talking about the Holocaust. He was saying, well, we can't possibly have the Ukrainian genocide classified as a Holocaust because a lot of the people involved in that were Jews. So he's admitted that Bolshevism, that was Jewish, and Hitler was against Bolshevism. World government, that's been a plan of the Jews since day one. So these are all all the enemies of Hitler. They all just happen to be majority Jewish. And the final one you've got here is Zionism. And I think this is a tricky one. I'm not so sure Hitler was exactly an enemy of Zionism. He was an enemy of Jewish supremacy. But as far as the Jews having their own country, I'm not so sure he was against that, because he wanted to move them to not Uganda, a place in Africa begins with M, I think.
Oh yeah, Madagascar.
Madagascar, that's it. He wanted to move them to Madagascar, and he did end up working with the Zionist Jews to transport them to Israel. So I'm not sure he was an enemy of Zionism. Maybe you've got a different view on this, Dennis.
Yeah, I think it was a treaty which was hidden for many years because it affected the thought of the Jew. You know, you think of a Jew of being beaten down and leaving Germany with just his shit on his back, which, you know, wasn't the truth. I mean, the fact is that they had bank accounts, they had money sent down there, all legal and all above board. If they couldn't take any goods with them, they sold them and the money was passed on. But I think it was Hitler's way, you know, of getting rid of a certain element that he didn't want. The only people, I mean, nobody would take him. I mean, America and Britain and anybody else didn't want him, really. So the only way they could go was the route, you know, to get rid of them down in Palestine. But the Zionists, a lot of these people like Herzl and all these people, these were diehard Jews, no different to what the bankers were. You know, I mean, they worked hand in hand. So, you know, you look at World War One, and, you know, the bankers, and especially the German bankers, who stabbed them in the back, and then, you know, that was all to get the Balfour Treaty. So they're all the same group to me. I'm pretty sure Hitler, I mean, I think he once said about Israel, he said that will be the place where all the gangsters will run to, where they can't be extradited.
Oh, yeah, it's become exactly what he said it would. All the crooks and criminals would go there and they'd have this bolt hole to go to. But I think he was a supporter of national Zionism, but against international Zionism. And if you think national Zionism is Jews wanting a place of their own somewhere, and it ended up being in Palestine, well, that's not such a bad idea. Because we've tried to get the Jews to go to their own place, and we tried to get them to become self-sufficient many times in the past, and that would solve the problems that they cause in other people's countries. So, and that was the idea, I think, because they were looking for somewhere to send them. I mean, that was the final solution, was to get them out of Europe. It wasn't to gas them all, it was to get them out of Europe. Yeah. Of course, they had to go somewhere. So, you know, if you think of national Zionism is Jews wanting self-determination for Jews in their own country, that I think he was okay with. But international Zionism, which is Jews taking over the establishment in everyone else's country and running everyone else's country for them, well, and using everyone else's country to fight their wars for them, I think he was totally against that. But I would class that as international Zionism, and the other one as national Zionism.
Well, this is where I differ with you, because Israel is Rothschilds. Rothschilds, you know, own Israel and the gear and everything for Israel to be the centre of the New World Order. And not only that, it's like when the EU guy, the leader a couple of years ago, when he turns around and says Germany only exists to serve Israel, to me it's the same bunch. It really, you know, and Merkel's turning around saying we owe, you know, Israel big time, because what we did to the Jews. Israel, Zionism, whatever you want to call it, I don't think it's a good thing. I think if Hitler had won World War II, I don't think he'd have wiped the Jews out, although he may have been tempted. I think what he would have done, he would have put them in an area, he would have found an area for them where they had no influence at all on civilization. Maybe a Madagascar. But to put them in Israel, they are, you know, they've dominated that region. They are a virus type of race, and so they've depleted the Palestinians to just a prison, and even the countries surrounding in the Middle East have all been depleted since the early days. So the domination now is Iran and Israel is a big confrontation. Which Trump said this week, he blasted his own Secret Service, saying that when the terrorists said they're not looking for a nuclear bomb, he said, go away and do your homework. He weren't having it, which means that implies that he's going along with Netanyahu with this intention to invade Iran. And I found a little bit of information this week, just briefly. During World War II, or even maybe just before, because of the link with Iran and Germany as Aryan, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Hitler actually sent 7,000 books down to Iran. There's a lot of these books about technology, and the Shah was, not the Shah we know, his father was in charge then, and they were warned by Britain and the Allies, you're getting a bit too close to Germany, invaded Iran, and then put his son in charge as a puppet, and basically, you know, they attacked the Germans, who were Aryans, but one of the meetings they had down there, which is not as an escape, mate, was in Iran for some reason, a strange place to have it. So that area down there, Middle East, you know, Zionism and Israel and all that, I don't think it's a good thing. I don't think, put it this way, we'd have been better off without them.
Well, it's the same people. I'm not saying it's different people. I'm just saying you've got two different concepts there. You've got nationalism for the Jews, which is, I would say, is national Zionism. And then you've got international Zionism, which is what we have today, which is Israel basically running the world, and you've still got Jews in our countries. So you can't say that's Jewish nationalism, because these Jews are in our countries. It's international Zionism. And I think this is why we get problems with civic nationalists who say, oh, I support Zionism. They don't mean they support Jews running our countries. What they mean is they support Jews going to Israel and staying in Israel and having nationalism. You see what I mean? Two different concepts there.
Yeah, but it's a problem when Obama's, can't remember his name now, Obama's vice president, you know, openly, I am a Zionist, you know, in front of the TV cameras talking to this Jew. It's, you know, for people that warrant any respect, you know, certainly are these kind of people. You know, they're just in it for themselves. They're guys. And if you haven't read the Talmud yet, I suggest they read a certain page which says, oh, the best of the guys must die. But it doesn't seem to be sinking in.
It doesn't. You do hope that one day, you know, the civic nationalists will wake up.
We do
reach out to them. But what you were mentioning there about the Middle East, I know that after the war, they did have a nationalist revival there. You had Arab nationalism. You had the Syrian Baath Party. I think you had something in Egypt as well. And I do remember reading about there being ex-members of the SS that were there advising them on this, so there was links between them. Obviously, it wasn't the Sunni types. It was the Shiites that they were involved with, and that would fit in with the Iranian thing and the Aryan side of it, because Iran used to be white. It used to be Aryan. That's mm-hmm. where the word Iran comes from. And the National Socialists were very into researching the early history of the white race, particularly over mm-hmm. in India. And particularly over there in Iran. Well, let's get back to the video here. And what we've got is Poland making threats of financial ruin to Danzig, which ended up with violence, as we say, and with torture. And Danzig itself was 98% German population. It wasn't even Polish. We ended up with 58,000 Germans murdered, and many more than that were missing. Many women and children were deported or tortured before death. 6 months later, the crisis had still not resolved. All Hitler's warnings went unheeded. There was a big summit that they were going to have, and Germany was saying, look, you know, the Poles have got to be here by midnight. This is our summit. We've got to have this summit. And the British faffed around with it, and the Poles faffed around with it, and nobody turned up. Nobody turned up. And then on September the 1st, that was it. That was the Blitzkrieg. And they suddenly went in, and they rescued the Germans, basically. And they also found all these corpses. That's how we know that there were all these Germans that had been tortured and mutilated. Yeah. And the mainstream reports, the world reports, were that this was after the Germans went in on the Blitzkrieg. This was Poles fighting back against the Germans. But the bodies
doesn't make it murder then, does it?
Yeah, well, the bodies
were... It like that Germany's instigated all that, which is a lie.
Yeah, the bodies were like 6 months old. They were all decomposed.
Yeah.
Which proved that this had happened beforehand. And Hitler's referring to that in a speech, isn't he? When he gives his speech in Danzig.
Yeah?
Yeah,
you're back now.
Yeah, when Hitler enters Danzig and he gives a speech on September the 19th, doesn't he? And he speaks about this. He speaks about and he says, how did the women and children cause trouble then? Because the reports were saying that it was the Germans that were causing the trouble. I forget the exact wording of it. And he says, well, how could the women and children have done this? So what was it that they were being accused of?
That's right, yeah. Well, they were being accused of instigating all this trouble. But like Hitler said, I mean, over the 20 years, you know, that Poland had all these areas and these Germans, they deported 1.2 million, I think, over that time. But when you deport somebody from these lands, you actually kicking them off their own land, because it's German land. So what Hitler's saying, right, you know, I fail to see what all this, you know, instigation trouble is with you know, learn what they reported, but even more so with the women and children that were tortured, and they were tortured, they were eyes gouged out, the usual Bolshevik thing, young kids. I think it was Leon Degrelle who mentioned it. He said he had evidence of boys having their testicles cut off. Real inhuman behaviour. And it was saying, you know, he can't see just exactly what these women and children had done to deserve that. And then eventual death.
Yeah, the moving of the people, I mean, that's the equivalent of, I guess, taking people from Gibraltar and moving them to Britain, or taking them from the Falklands Islands and moving them to Britain, and they've lived in these other countries for centuries. And these Germans had been living where they were living for centuries as Germans, and suddenly they had to leave, and they were being persecuted, and nobody was doing anything about it. I mean, one of the guarantees, I think, in the Versailles Treaty was that this wouldn't happen. They wouldn't be treated like that. I mean, they were banned from even speaking German, banned from teaching German in the schools, and a financial embargo. Was it something like 98% of everything was going to be cut out from Danzig, so they weren't actually going to be able to receive anything from the outside.
Well, I saw a comment in a forum not too long ago, and they were talking about this, and somebody happened to write it down, like, well, you know, the Versailles Treaty didn't seem all that bad. But then, you know, when you're being starved to sign it, the Germans must have seen it as something they didn't really want to be a part of. Because in effect, it wasn't the peace treaty, it was the death treaty, because it was designed either to destroy Germany completely or cause another war. And they at that time would never thought something like Hitler and the rise of the SS and the Nazis, etc., would have arisen so powerfully, because for a time there, everything they did, it was knocking them sixes and sevens. You know, the invasion of France and Britain, invasion of Poland, you know, then the invasion of Russia up to a certain point. They must have been losing sleep at some point. Must have been.
Well, there was certainly on to a winner. When you think up until that point, up until the invasion of Poland, as you were saying here, he'd almost completed it. He'd almost got all the German lands back. There hadn't been any lives lost. It had all been done legitimately. He'd come to power by democratic means. And it seems to me that, you know, Britain was backing Poland and was just desperate to stop that from happening. Right at the last point, they said, no, you know, we can't have him doing this.
I agree.
We're going to back you. Doesn't matter what you do to them, provoke them into war. And they must have done. I mean, to be torturing these Germans, these women and children. I mean, we're not talking about Bolshevik Jews. We're talking about people that actually fought against the Bolsheviks a couple of decades earlier and saw them off back to Russia. So I find it hard to believe that these Poles would do this to these Germans. But they did.
Well, the Jewish press, I think, wound them up, I think, as well. I don't think they helped the cause.
So you think the Jewish press may have been telling lies about the Germans, saying they were going to invade, and saying one thing to one group of people and another to the other? Because I think I remember reading in the White Book that the Germans were very upset about what was happening in the Polish press. And they said, look, we've made it illegal over here in Germany to run down the Poles. We don't allow any anti-Polish stuff in the press. We don't want people persecuting the Poles.
Right.
We're keeping all these attacks that are going on out of the newspapers. So what are you doing, exaggerating all these things that are happening and making the Germans out to be so bad?
Yeah. I mean,
it does say
because
that.
Because they had a long history, didn't they, of not liking each other. This goes back a long time. You know, lands, you know, being swapped here, there and everywhere. So I think the Jews didn't think it was that difficult to wind them up, you know, a few hairy, scary stories here, there and everywhere. And but what I found out was in this time when the Germans who wanted to be with Germany, but obviously, you know, they were cut off, suddenly the school teachers were given 3 months to learn Polish. And if you didn't know Polish in 3 months, you were deported. And then a Polish teacher came in and started teaching the Germans Polish. And consequently, it would have been, and it did after World War II, there's 200,000 at least over there who don't even recognise themselves as German now because they changed the surnames to a Polish sounding name as well. They changed the name of Danzig, so people are reminded of what that was about. All these little things, over time, people forget and new generations come and slowly and surely it disappears, just like a lot of our history.
Well, they wanted to strip them of their identity, strip them of their heritage, and just to absorb them into Poland, basically, with the backing of Britain and France, knowing that Germany would not allow that to happen and that that would provoke Germany into war. And then Britain and France were supposed to go in there and show the Germans what a bad leader they had in Adolf Hitler and take him out of power. And they thought it was going to happen very quickly. And it didn't. They massively miscalculated on the tenacity of the Germans and just how highly they thought of Adolf Hitler. And also at this time, he makes the non-aggression pact with the USSR.
Correct.
And that was a really clever move. And that wasn't expected either. That wasn't expected.
No, it went against his feelings as well because he wrote about it not long after. I said that, he went against his own feelings and he felt that it were good for the nation to try and have some kind of a pact with Russia. But I think he also half expected, Stalin to turn because he didn't know what Stalin was. And so, on the face of it, he's been criticised for breaking that treaty, not Stalin, because people had told that Russia were about to invade Europe and what a mess that would have been.
Well, he did kind of let down the Baltic states, really, by doing that, because straight away the Soviets are straight into East Poland and they're also straight into the Baltic states and occupying them. But a couple of years later, the Germans go in there and they liberate the Baltic states.
Yeah.
So it was almost like, look, we've got to do this. We've got to buy ourselves a little bit of time. And then we're going to crush Bolshevism once and for all. You just put up with this for a little while. And then once I've got Germany back, then we'll get the forces together and we'll crush Bolshevism. It seems to me that was his line of thinking. He just needed to buy a bit of time. And of course, that's what they did. And also then he moves straight into Denmark and Norway. And we're told, oh, he invaded Denmark, he invaded Norway. Yeah. But this was after France and England have declared war, so he needed to secure those areas before France and England went in there and took them.
That's right.
It wasn't
because Rothschild instigated. I mean, the bankers ruled Europe long before Hitler came along. I mean, World War I, all Europe was under the Rothschild bankers. And what Hitler was doing was slowly and surely eliminating these bankers with Christian leaders. And even more so, more information this week on that as well.
Well, that was the real reason for them wanting the war, is because he cut out these international financiers and they knew that the rest of the world would follow suit. Once they saw the improvement to life and the improvement in all the innovation and the things that they were able to create, because once you do that, it sort of untaps a hidden load of wealth, really, because you're tapping directly into the wealth of the nation without it being siphoned off to foreigners,
to these foreign bankers. After having a taste of that kind of life, which is why the Germans fought so hard. But if all of Europe and all the world, or most of the world, had gone under that system of Hitler's, the Jews would have had a nightmare trying to get it back under them.
Well, because the people could see the rewards of their hard work. Instead of the rewards going off to these bankers, the rewards were going in the higher wages and the better goods that people could buy, and that inspired them to work more. And also because the Germans could keep their word, so you could loan out money to them and know that they were going to pay that back. So they could say, well, each German person is worth X amount to the country. The more children you have, the more money we can generate in advance based on the people that are here. And none of it went off into usury. None of it went off into interest. So you literally, the more children you have, the more wealth they could say that the country was going to have in the future, so they could then borrow it now to create things with. And this is the way that an economy should work, and the bankers were absolutely terrified of that. So they had to force him into war. And then you've got Mussolini that joins in as well. He says, well, I'm going to join up with the Germans as well. Who else was there at first? Was there Germany? And then who sort of, apart from Italy, said, right, we're going to join up with the Germans?
Well, the four dictators really were Franco. Spain had already suffered. So you had Mussolini and Hitler who managed to save Spain. And then you had Pavlović in Croatia. He was the other one down there, which was Roman Catholic, Christian, and a dictator.
So you had a Catholic unity there, didn't you?
Yeah.
And then
all of them were Catholic. Yeah.
Then he goes into France. And because obviously England and France are the main states that are against him, and he conquers France, and the victorious Germans march into Paris, and they give the French the pretty much the same deal that they had in the Germans were given. Only they didn't chop off bits of Paris and say, "Well, these bits are going to go to someone else." Didn't rape any women. Didn't starve them. A peace treaty was signed. A proper peace treaty was signed, which meant that it was unlawful for there to be this French resistance that gets lionized now. Yeah, lots of Jews involved with it, but they get lionized and made out to be heroes. They were nothing but terrorists. France had signed a peace treaty. And when Hitler was right at the top of his might, he'd conquered France, he'd taken Denmark, he'd taken Norway, he's then pleading with England to stop the war. Please, can we stop the war? And he even whips England's ass and instead of wiping out the army or imprisoning them all, he allows them to go back in these fishing boats. And then he says, please, England, stop this war, stop this pointless war. And England still wouldn't stop. I mean, that really shows you when he's, you know, he's just had a huge victory. He's just conquered France. And instead of saying, right, we're going to steam on in and now we're going to take England and I'm going to rule the world, he says, look, let's stop all this. Let's go back to how it was. You know, the Germans didn't want to be ruling the French, ruling Denmark and Norway. They wanted to be concentrating on Deutschland. They wanted to be working on what was best for the Germans. He didn't want to be wasting all this money on war. He wanted to be improving the lives of his German people. And the Frenchmen and the Danes and the Norwegians, they soon saw the benefits that National Socialism brought, and they were volunteering to join the SS.
Exactly.
Yeah, they had a good life. Yeah. I mean, you can go out to Eastern Europe. You can go to places like Latvia and Lithuania, talk to the people there. And, you know, they know that life was so much better under the National Socialists than it ever was under the communists. You know, it was horrific what the Soviets did to them. And they had all these plans for improvement under National Socialism. The Germans were going to rebuild all the infrastructure and they were going to give them everything that was as good in Germany. They were going to get in these countries, like we said before about when he went into Russia and he was going to improve the lives of the Russian people there by bringing the infrastructure up to the standards of Western Europe. And Churchill, in his memoirs, he says, well, we could have prevented the war, but we didn't want to. And again, that's very telling. That's very telling.
Exactly. It brings us to a point now with people not realizing that Russia was going to invade. This, if you go a little bit deeper, this shows you exactly what the bankers, even today, think of Europe. What they're doing to Europe today, flooding all the Africans in, funding Hollywood, funding all these people, you know, these things happen. And back then, they were quite prepared because you think about it, they've lost all revenue now from Europe. They've nearly lost, well, shortly, back to nearly lose all the revenue from Russia. But they have to, it's a big chunk is Europe of their wages. And so they're saying now to Stalin, get your army ready, we're going in. And not caring one iota of all the rapes and all the torture and all the death. Because remember, a little bit later on in the war, Britain had a meeting with the clergy to tell them exactly what the Bolsheviks were going to do. Because their excuse was, well, we saw it happen in Poland. So they knew what the Bolsheviks were going to do and they were prepared to let them on wild onto Europe, which was in a bit of chaos after that war with France and England. So these bankers, trust me, they want to see Europe mixed.
So the Soviets were all getting ready to invade Western Europe, and then suddenly you got Operation Barbarossa. And you make a point in the episode, Dennis, of saying that one of the proofs of this was the amount of captives that the Germans got, because all the Soviets were lined up ready to invade Western Europe, so they were all there ready to be captured, basically, and they were captured. And at this point, also you've got many different Waffen SS groups from all these other countries in Europe that have joined up with Germany to go and take out the Soviets, basically. You've got all these different legions, all these different Waffen SS legions. You've pretty much got all the nationalists in Europe and all the good people, all the Christians have realized this threat that's coming from Soviet Russia. And they go out there to fight against them. And Hitler saves
Western Europe from it. And who's the people to save Russia? Who are them people? The people you least expect, America and England.
Yeah. And America and England are working alongside Stalin. But then you've got this historian, James Perloff, and he's quoting somebody from 1938. I think it's a banker. And he makes it clear what the war is about. And he pretty much says that as long as Germany and Italy are under their current governments, they won't touch foreign loans, and they've eliminated the international financier and all those who make profits from it. And basically, the banks were frightened that this would spread, and they called for war. And that's a banker's record from 1938 that's been dug up.
And there's a few quotes from Jews along that time as well. You know, Hitler doesn't want war, but he's going to get war. Things like that. And Churchill. But I also remember a part in The Great Story Never Told, right at the end, if you can remember it all, Hitler is asked by one of his SS who guard him at the bunker. And he actually says to Hitler, did you really have to go into Poland? Because even, you know, he must have had some doubts. And Hitler turned around and said to him, he said, what else could I do? He said, I knew Roosevelt were behind it, so he already knew that. And he said, and there were, I think he quoted something like 1.2 million on the border. And so he was saying, his hands were tied. He had to save his own people, but he knew that, you know, Roosevelt and others were pushing for a world war even then.
He was really between a rock and a hard place.
Yes, he was.
But he did end up saving Western Europe from communism. And nobody gives him that credit.
There should be a statue now in the middle of Europe now.
Yeah, for saving Western Europe. And then you bring up Brezhnev. Brezhnev, he admitted to Stalin's plan.
He admitted it.
To invade Europe. You've got that in there. And you get this preemptive strike. But also, when they went into Poland, they found all the secret documents in Warsaw, and they found the officers in the process of burning them. And we've talked about that before. Yep. And that they revealed the guarantee that Britain and France would join Poland in the event of the war with Germany, and that Roosevelt was join the war at a later date. This is where all these documents came from. And then the US officials, they deny the authenticity of these after they get published. In Britain's blue book, you then have one of the quotes from there. And Britain claims that it was compelled to guarantee Poland against aggression for reasons of international morality. So the people that have teamed up with Soviet Russia are saying that they had to defend Poland for reasons of international morality. I mean, how immoral can you get than to team up with the Bolsheviks? I mean, it doesn't get any more immoral than that. And yet they just told this barefaced lie in the British documents that it was for reasons of international morality that they gave this blank check, basically, to Poland. And then they admit that the reason for this was really aimed at Germany, not for the protection of Poland.
Else.
Yeah,
I mean, not for them. I put a little bit of a quote in between the commentary, and when Stalin invaded, Britain stayed quiet, even as we were loading the Poles onto the trains and away to the gulags. And of course, not long after this came the Katyn massacre, which again, Roosevelt and Churchill knew about and who did it. And instead of chastising him, gave him a sword after the Germans suffered defeat at Stalingrad. So they're all in it together. It's all one clique. The same cliques around today. They're just the relatives of the ones in the past. And they're as ruthless, if not more ruthless, than even them back then.
And we also had Russia tried to invade Finland as well. And they were unsuccessful at that. I mean, great heroism there in the Winter War. The Soviets, they went into Latvia, Lithuania and Estonia, and they tried to get into Finland. And the Finns managed to hold them off. I think they held them off for 6 months, and then they came to a truce. I mean, that was incredible that Finland actually fought off the might of the Red Army. So, you know, the rest of the people in Europe knew what was going on. They knew what the Soviets were doing, and yet they were being told that they've got to fight against Germany. And when you think of, you know, just how much of Europe that Hitler liberated, you think France, Holland, Denmark, Norway, and he's linked up with Spain. I mean, you had a big united front against Bolshevism, and really it was the might of America that broke it. And today we're told Hitler wanted to conquer the world. He wanted to conquer all these countries, and he didn't. He liberated them. They were liberated from the banking system that they had.
That's right.
The tyranny, the banker's tyranny, and that's what it's all been about.
I mean, Britain isn't really classed as mainland Europe, obviously. And people outside Europe didn't really know what was going on. It's only now 70, 80 years that things are coming to light. Obviously too late. But it certainly shows, if you understand the strings and puppets of World War II, certainly shows the morality of the Germans, the two world wars they had. Somebody said to me in a comment today, why do the Germans not fight? I said, well, maybe in the two world wars, you know, they've lost the best of the race, millions, and then 5 years of brainwashing and the continuation after that. You know, they are, in a way, just a country left to serve Israel. And that's the brutal honesty of it all.
Well, you mentioned there that we can find out about this today, but there were people that knew about this in the 70s and the 80s, and they were absolutely demonized. I mean, you think about the way that the National Front are portrayed, the British National Party, British Movement, and the way that they were portrayed in the 70s Sox and 80s, and they were the devils incarnate. Yeah, they were skinheads, they were monsters, they were racists. No, they were people that knew the truth, and that's why they joined up with these organizations. That's why they had the bravery and the courage, because they knew what they were doing was right, and they were supporting what was right and what was good and what was moral. And yet, when you read about them today, they're totally demonized. All nationalists are demonized. But this is the reason why people support National Socialism. It's not because they want to gas Jews. It's because they were really, really good. They were the most honorable, decent, administration that Europe has ever had, I think.
For sure, if not the world. The thing is, people like John Emery and Lord Hawke, they now managed to get away from Britain and fight over in Europe. I read the other day Lord Hawke's brother, who had nothing to do, he wasn't even into politics, was put in jail for 4 years. Like he was saying, this is a crime of his brother's he's been punished for. And of course, obviously, then when they came back to England, both Emery and Joyce was hung.
Well, you think about the heroism and bravery of Rudolf Hess on his peace mission. And we're told today, I mean, he was the devil incarnate. He supported Hitler. You know, that man was so brave. He flew over in a plane, jumped out of a plane for the first time ever with a parachute, took his life into his hands just to try and save Europe from a pointless brothers' war. And the guy should have been sainted, and he was just locked up for the rest of his life, never to see anyone else for the rest of his life. And you've got incredible bravery, incredible, noble, honourable behaviour here, people that we should be looking up to, and they're absolutely demonised. And civic nationalists will demonise us for supporting them. Well, this is why we support them, because they're just such decent people. It was a decent regime. It was a decent way of living. It's the way that white people should be living. And instead, we've got these devils running things. This is why we're National Socialists. And they'll never break us. You'll never stop people from being National Socialists once they know the truth. You can't go back to the lies once you know the truth. Because it keeps you going. Keeps you going, knowing that you know the truth. All right, Dennis, we've reached the end, and we're on time, I think. Thank you very much for coming on.
All right.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with more Truthful Out Radio for you, and we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.